There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Hollywood Casino in Charlestown, West Virginia. April's featured entertainment includes Los Lobos on the 12th, Josh Turner on the 13th, and The Steel Woods on the 26th. Details and tickets at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com. Must be 21 to enter the casino floor and attend a show. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. The Grammy-winning hip-hop trio Diggable Planets headlines the Jazz and Blossoms Park Jam this Sunday at Franklin Park in Washington, D.C. I spoke to co-founder Craig Doodlebug Irving about the group's career, from its philosophical origins to its smash hit Rebirth of Slick, Cool Like That. Hey, Craig Doodlebug Irving. Hey, thanks so much for joining us on WTOP in Washington, D.C.
Peace. How you doing, brother?
Doing all right. We're doing all right.
Hey, yo, man, you have an incredible radio voice. I love your radio voice, man.
thanks for saying that.
No, it's dope, for real. Appreciate you having me on your platforms, too. Thank you.
Of course, of course. We're talking because you and, you know, the Grammy-winning hip-hop trio, Diggable Planets, are coming to D.C. This Sunday at Franklin Park for the Jazz and Blossoms Park Jam. What can we expect from this particular show? You know, like, I assume you bust out all the big hits from back, you know, early 90s, but is there anything new you sprinkle in? Any covers? Like, what do we got setlist-wise?
Yeah, we're going to be doing songs from both albums, mainly the first album, but we're going to sprinkle in some joints from Blowout Comb. We got a lot of, you know, we got some incredible musicians working with us. You know what I'm saying? We call them the Culprits, based out of Seattle. We have Thaddeus Turner, our music director. He also plays the guitar and a little bit of keyboards. We got his brother, Tugboat Turner, on the bass. Then we got Casa Overall on drums. And we have his brother, Carlos Overall, on saxophone and percussions. And then we have my main man, Darius Wilrich, on the keys. And, and we got Butterfly on beats and vibes. He's chilling on his beat machine, doing vocals, Ladybug, myself. We're going to rock out, do some improvisational stuff because the use of the band allows us some freedom of space, you know what I'm saying, to do some other things. So we take some of our songs that you're familiar with and we stretch them out, take them to different universes and go other places with them. So it's gonna be a crazy experience, you know what I'm saying? If you into the Diggable Planet sound and you into experimental jazz, funk, soul, hip hop, then you'll enjoy yourself.
Awesome. And thanks for, you know, rattling off the band members behind you too, because I would say, you know, Grammy winning hip hop trio of you and Butterfly and Ladybug, but I'm sure they appreciate the shout out, all, you know, the guitar
players. Oh man, it's, come on, man. We wouldn't be what we are without them, you know what I'm saying? All of us together makes the sound what it is, you know what I'm saying?
Now I wanted to know, have you ever played this particular event or even this spot before? But I'm sure it all runs together because you guys are touring and probably playing all over the place. But how about I just say it more broadly? When's the last time you rocked DC?
Oh, we were in DC not too long ago. I can't remember the exact venue, but we were there within the last year or two. You know what I'm saying? I know we did the 930 Club one time. We did City Winery one of the times we were there in the last couple of years.
All right, awesome. Yeah, City Winery, sadly, is not a pandemic casualty, at least in D.C. I know they got other spots around town, but 930 Club.
Oh, I didn't know that.
930 Club.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
I know, right? I know. Right. I always relied on them I always got cool interviews from them, and then suddenly it was like, they were gone. But it's all right. Yeah, pandemic took a lot of venues out, man.
Yeah, but, it did.
U Street Music Hall went, that was gone too now. But anyway, I wanted to ask because how do you pronounce Ladybug Mecca? It's Mariana Vieira, is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I know she was from Silver Spring, I think. And I think you met her, what, was it attending Howard University?
Yes, exactly, exactly. I was going to Howard University in the mid-80s. And while I was there, you know, on the hip-hop scene, I met her. She was part of like a hip-hop dance crew. And they would be at all the little hip-hop events, you know what I'm saying? And we got really cool. And during that time also, I'm in college, so I'm going to all the little, whenever there was a hot college party anywhere up and down the East Coast, I was there, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of these places, I would see Ishmael Butler, you know what I'm saying? Butterfly, you know what I'm saying? I'd see him at these parties. And then,
because he's from Seattle and you're from Philly, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. But he was going to college on the East Coast at UMass. Okay. And plus his grandmother lived in Philly. And that fact, his grandmother lived around the corner from my grandmother in Philadelphia. And this is how he and I got,
oh, no way.
Got connected, you know what I'm saying? And we started seeing each other at these parties. And we had some mutual friends. And then come to find out that his grandmother was like lived about 10 minutes away from mine. And we went out when we were there, we would hang out, go play basketball, go to record stores, digging in crates, talking about music. And that's when he introduced me to this concept and idea that he had been developing called the Diggable Planets. At the time, I was in a group called the Dread Poets Society based out of Philly. It was me, my man, Jamar Truth, and my man, Bun.
And Robin and, Williams.
Exactly. Rest in peace, Robin Williams. He was an incredible actor, activist, and just a great human being, too.
Yeah. But okay, so but obviously named sort of the moniker sort of.
We took the name from that movie. Exactly. Dread Poets Society was our group. And I was in a group at the time. We used a track. We had a song called Skin Treatment, which used the original Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers sample that we eventually used for Cool Like That. Mm-hmm. And when I met Ishmael, he and I, you know, let each other hear each other's demos because we both were doing music. And he was telling me about the Diggable Planets, and I was telling him about my group. And he asked me after we got really cool to help him out with the group, you know what I'm saying, and be a part of it. And I was like, hey, I'm down for that. You know what I'm saying? I never knew that it would go to where it would go. You know what I'm saying? So at the time, it was just two guys, you know, like-minded individuals collabing on some music, you know, vibes and feelings and shit like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Excuse my language. But, yeah, so we started vibing on that. We got cool, and I was cool with Mecca at the time, and she would come up and visit in Philly, and a couple of times she was there, Ishmael would be over visiting at my grandmother's house, and we'd all be in the living room listening to music, talking, and he's talking about this the group, the Diggable Planets. And one day, we didn't even know she was in the background writing to these beats that we were playing while we were vibing and stuff. And she comes up out of nowhere and starts busting these rhymes, and we're like, yo, where'd this come from? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But so eventually Ishmael invited her to be a part of the group. And he was doing his thing up in New York as an intern at a label called Sleeping Bag Records. And because of the relationships he had, being an intern, going around to all these different labels, you know, sending messages, packages and all that, whatever they needed him to do, you know what I'm saying? He would collect and build relationships with different people there. And one of those relationships turned out to be Dennis Wheeler. May he rest in peace. He was an A&R at this fledgling label called Pendulum Records. And headed up by Ruben Rodriguez, who also, may he rest in peace, started Pendulum Records. And they heard our demo and they called us to New York and asked us to sign to the label.
Yeah, Pendulum signed y'all in 92 up when you had moved to Brooklyn, I guess. One more before we get to that, because I want to go into, you know, that massive first album, obviously. But one more on, you know, sort of the meeting of you all. When you introduce yourself, were you like, they call me Craig, and was he like, they call me Ishmael?
Nah, in the streets, they call me C Knowledge. I call myself C Knowledge, you know what I'm saying? I renamed myself C Knowledge, you know what I'm saying? And so when I introduced myself, as C Knowledge. You know
okay,
what I'm
so you were C Knowledge already then. Okay.
Yeah, I was C Knowledge already then.
But where'd you come up with Butterfly and Ladybug Mecca and Doodleball?
That was his, you know, he came up with when he introduced us to the whole his demo of Diggable Planets, and he started explaining to us the concept of the group, the insect theory, It's all for one, one for all within the insect community. It's not about ego or anything like that. Everything is done just for the good of the hive, or, you know what I'm saying, for the good of the all. You know what I'm saying? And that's the concept he wanted for this group. You know what I'm saying? So he wanted to strip down the ego, and he wanted to do this insect thing. And I was like, damn it, insect? Oh, man, I don't know. What insect would I call myself? And then eventually I chilling with my friends, we watching a lot of kung fu flicks and blaxploitation films. And I came across this one movie called Cleopatra Jones. And Cleopatra Jones was like the super spy female from the hood. And she was saving the hood from these evil drug dealers and hustlers and people that were trying to bring the community down. And the head of this gang in the movie was named Doodlebug. And he was played by this character named Antonio Fargas, who also was in Starsky and Hutch. He also passed away. May he rest in peace. But when I heard his name, I said, Doodlebug. I said, oh, okay, there it is. That connected with me instantaneously. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be Doodlebug. And that's how I got my name, you know what I'm saying, as a part of Dickable Planets.
I love it. I love it. And you know what? If you ever do bump into Christopher Nolan, you know, just won Best Picture and all that for Oppenheimer. But if you ever bump into him, yeah. His first short film was called Doodlebug. You got to talk to
Word?
Him. Yeah, man.
Wow.
It was like a 3-minute short. I think it was like black and white. You could watch it probably on YouTube. I don't know. It was like late.
Yeah,
I'm
going to search it up. That's
97. So you predate using that. Although I don't know. You probably couldn't, you know, get any rights to it because it was all goes back to the black.
I wouldn't even.
Film, like you said.
I wouldn't even pursue nothing like that, man. It's a cool, you know what I'm saying? Like,
excuse
cool
to reach
thing.
Out to him.
Exactly. Yeah. No doubt.
Exactly. Well, I like that. No, but seriously, I like the insect theory. I like that. So where does the Dickable Planets, like, what's in the name with that? Like, how does that tie into the insect theory?
You know, the thing is that every man is a planet. Every person is a planet. We are our own world. You know what I'm saying? We control our own world. So we looked at it like that. Every person is a planet. And in the sense of like the jazz world, to dig, you know what I'm saying? That was a part of the vernacular in that era, you know what I'm saying? So we wanted to combine all the things, our philosophy of life, of everybody being their own person, self-sufficient, and a sentient being that controls their own life, and, you know what I'm saying, make their own decisions. We're all our own planet. We also wanted to bring in the Dickable thing, and, you know what I'm saying, and the relationship between the music, which is the jazz that we loved, and the fact that we all were individuals and thought for ourselves and freedom thinkers, you know what I'm saying? So we put that together. Well, Ishmael put that together, and he named it Dickable Planets. And when he brought it to me at first, I was like, wow, Dickable Planets, that's wild. And as I sat there and let it absorb, I was like, yo, it's really dope, to be honest with you. I would have never come up with that, but I understand the concept, and I would, you know what I'm saying? But and it was dope, so I was with it.
I love it. Yeah. It kind of all ties into, like, you know, it's sort of like all Mother Nature kind of stuff. You know, you got planets, you got Dickable, you're digging in the dirt, you got insects, you know, insects worked out. There was, you know, the Beatles, you know, some insects can work out. Buddy Holly was the crickets. So, you know.
Yeah, it's worked out pretty good for us in the last 30 years.
I would say so. Well, but anyway, seriously, though, I like the high concept of it. Like it's deep thinking. It's not just some superficial thing. There's a lot of, you know, depth to it. And, you know, you can sort of see that in the title of that first album, Reaching a New Refutation of Time and Space. I mean, you guys are, you know, working on some profound things here. But talk about, you know, putting together, you know, that hit lead single. You mentioned it, Rebirth of Slick, cool like that. That's what you all are known for. I love that it starts with sort of that jazzy bass line and even like some finger snapping before the beat actually kicks in. But yeah, like, remember you putting that together in the studio?
Yeah, it was actually one of the last songs we put together. Like I said earlier in the this conversation, the original track was being used by my group, the Dread Poets Society. We had a song called Skin Treatment, and we were using that same exact sample, and Ishmael heard it. And when I started getting really involved in with him developing the Dickable Planets demo, he asked me if it would be cool. He said, I got an idea that I would like to use for that track y'all was doing. He said, is it cool if I use that sample y'all? Yes. We said, yeah, cool. So he got the vinyl, and he went in and then made his interpolation of it. And it turned out to be what you hear today. You know what I'm saying? Cool like that. But it was definitely one of the last songs we did. And it was actually not even our first choice to be the first single. We had a song called Brown Baby Funk. And it was a sample that we used, but we couldn't get it cleared. So we had to go back to the drawing board. And next thing you know, everybody in the Pendulum recording office was calling us up. Like, yo, man, every time we go in the office, they'd be like, yo, that song, Rebirth of Slick Floyd, that I think I'm feeling that joint. That might be the one. And we're like, word, that was, I never even really thought about that song as a single. You know what I'm saying? But then everybody, I just kept hearing people telling us that they was with it. And we were like, all right, cool, let's go with it. If y'all feel that powerful, Bella, that means y'all gonna actually put some weight behind it in marketing, and you know what I'm saying? Because you're feeling just as good about it as we are. So let's go with it.
Well, that's what you gotta do.
And
Gotta keep the ear to the ground. And if it sounds like other people are vibing with it, then you shift gears and you go with that.
You gotta be willing to be open-minded to certain things. Sometimes, you know, you get closed-minded, it's your baby, you know what I'm saying? When you make something your art, you know what I'm saying? You want to protect it, you know what I'm saying? And so when somebody else is co-signs that feeling, you're like, yeah, let's go. All right, cool, let's go. You get a burst of confidence, because most artists, like, I can't speak for everybody, but most artists, I say, would be, you know what I'm saying, very shy and sensitive to their art, you know what I'm saying, and how people view it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you sort of, you know, made that quick pivot and you called the audible at the line of scrimmage, or whatever your analogy, because, man, that thing took off. I mean, that was not only top the rap charts, but I mean, it was a crossover hit. I mean, it was like, I don't know, crack top 15 or something on like just the overall Billboard chart. But tell me about it winning the Grammys and that whole experience, because it won for best rap performance by a duo or a group. And I want to list the murderer's row of people you beat, because it's insane. You beat
It is.
Arrested Development's Revolution, Cypress Hill's Insane in the Brain, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg's Nothing But a G Thing, and Naughty by Nature's Hip Hop Parade. I mean, come on, those are like the biggest
Yo,
hits of
son.
rap in that era, and you beat them all.
Yo, son. Let me tell you, son. Look, just when as you name it, I can still feel that feeling I got when they named, when my manager sat in his office and named all the nominees. I was like, yo, after the second or third name, I was like, yo, we have no chance of winning this. Like, I was just like, I'm just happy that we even, I can't believe that we even actually been named in the, you know what I'm saying, in the same breath as these incredible people that I listen to. I'm fans of all of them, you know what I'm saying?
Hell
So when they
yeah.
said it, I was like, yo, that's crazy. I said, we have no chance of winning this. I don't know, but it was just a moment in time. It was a, I don't know what it was. It caught some kind of fire in the industry, and people was into it. The people who voted for the Grammys at that time was, I guess, you know what I'm saying, they was into it. And we got lucky, because when they called our name in that night, I'm telling you, I was like, yo, I went blank. Like, what? I swore Snoop and Dre was gonna win that. To me, I was like, that's theirs, man. They got this, man.
Yeah, literally, it's one, two, and three into the four, and they had to stay down sitting on the floor and watch you guys go up on the stage. Like, seriously, like it's and Cypress Hill and I mean, well, Arrested Development had just
Yeah,
won
Cypress.
one
Yeah,
best new
yo, come
artist.
on, man. Come on,
Arrested
man.
Development
All of
just
those.
won like the year before or whatever, 2 years before or whatever.
Yo, all of those, it was Naughty by Nature. They all were powerhouse groups that was all over the radio, fans all over the world. You know, I felt like we had no chance. But it's not like, I mean, we got that and was good. But all those groups you named have had incredible careers. You know what I'm saying? Major hits after that. They good. I think they good. You know what I'm saying? They good.
I
We, at
think,
least
yeah.
they can give us this. They can give us this one little, you know what I'm saying? It's,
Snoop and Dre just played the Super Bowl. They're all right.
yeah, they good. They
They're doing
good.
okay.
Their legacy is solidified.
Exactly. Well, it's just I think it speaks to your all's creative you know credibility there that you have a one up on at least on them for that one. That's great.
I'm Bradley Traynor.
And I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Well, tell me about the second album, because like you said, it's hard to believe you only really did two. You know, there was some compilation stuff after, but two, like, you know, original albums. The second one was Blowout Comb 94. Tell me about I know a lot of, you know, reviewers and stuff at the time said it sounded different, like more political, that kind of thing. But like, Yeah, like what was sort of the idea of putting together that second one? Were you just trying to do something, you know, completely different, or while not alienating what people loved about the first one?
Yeah, I mean, it was about just being, like you said, every man's a planet. We were just doing what we wanted to do. And I'm saying, as an artist, you just want to do what you want to do. It's not about what the fans want. It's what you do. And then you invite the fans to your world, into your world. You want to come here. This is me. This is who I am in this moment of time. If you like it, come on. Come jump on and just roll with us. You know what I'm saying? If you don't, there's other choices out there. You know what I'm saying? So because of the success of Reaching, it empowered us to just do what we wanted to do. We were always thinking like the Blow Our Comb album, even before Reaching, we thought about, you know what I'm saying? We thought that way because the experiences that we had as who we are in this world, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So Blow Our Comb was just our chance to show who we were and how we thought and how we really thought in terms of society and politics and things like that. You know what I'm saying? And we just put it into our music. And I don't know. I mean, it's critically acclaimed. It just didn't do well, record sales as well as Reaching did. The record label was a little... They gave us I give them the credit that they gave us the freedom to do what we wanted to do, because they didn't want they wanted another Cool Like That hits, you know what I'm saying, a single that they could go really push and market to everybody, you know what I'm saying? And once we submitted the album, they were like, oh shit, they were surprised. They were like, we love it. This shit sounds good, but where's the single? We was like, where's that Cool Like That? And I was like, well, think about it. I mean, nobody in this office thought Cool Like That was going to be a big hit, the hit that it was. You know what I'm saying? We just liked it. It was a feeling. This is the same thing. It's just you know what I'm saying? It's just a different feeling. You know what I'm saying? But it's this moment in time. This is how we feel. You know what I'm saying? After we toured on with Reaching, we saw a lot of things across the world that affected us in many different ways. And Blow Our Comb, I think, was just the result of that situation. You know what I mean?
And it was still critically acclaimed, like you said. So, you know, you can't be fishing, searching for you know, beholden to just try to put out hits. You go with what, you know, the creative juices are flowing and follow your gut.
Exactly.
Your heart. And sometimes it's a surprise hit, but you can't be chasing that.
That's true. Exactly. You'll never get what you want when you're chasing it like that. When you know what I'm saying? You just got to go with the flow. And if the world says, oh, I love this too, then that's cool. It's more natural and genuine, you know what I'm saying, than trying to make songs because you think that's what people want to hear of it. I mean, I guess every artist keeps that in mind somewhere in the back of their head, but
sure.
If you truly, you know what I'm saying, really want to just express yourself, that ain't really on your main priority.
Yeah, you're cognizant of it on the back.
Yeah, yeah,
but
exactly.
Overall, it's not the driving force. You never know if the planet's going to dig it, you know? All right, well, that's the best pun I can do off your name. But hey, so real quick, you've been generous with your time. Like, so what I know you all, what I guess shortly after that, in what 95, you broke up, but then I guess you reunited like what 10 years later and did that compilation album Beyond the Spectrum, the Creamy Spy Chronicles, and toured. And obviously you're still touring today, so no hard feelings or whatever. But what caused the breakup? Was it just like creative differences? Were you all exhausted? And then it took a couple years to finally be like, all right, let's get back together.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of all that, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we're young, we're in our 20s. We had a lot of success early. And interpersonal
relationships. Trying to bring back bad memories. I'm done.
No, it's not bad memories. It is what it is. I mean, those experiences made us who we are today. You know what I'm saying? It is what it is. I don't regret none of it. You know what I'm saying? I don't really regret it. I just wish I had made better decisions in certain situations, but it is what it is.
That's
life
in general, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, we were immature, young, 20s, a lot of different people. Once you get successful, you have a lot of people in your ear telling you how great you are and how much you don't need this person. Not saying that that's what people said to them. I don't know what they said to them, but you know what I'm saying? But something definitely fractured the relationship that we had in the beginning and opened the door to a lot of different evils and just insecurities and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that created walls around each of us, you know what I'm saying? And it made it hard for us to get in the studio together, blah, 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 blah. And it just got to a point where it was just, it just wasn't working anymore. It just wasn't, we weren't going to be able to put out a new album because everybody was on some different shit. You know what I mean? So we decided to just break up at the time. And I look back and I wish I had said certain things that I didn't say, but damn, like I said, I don't regret, but at the same time, I wish I had made better decisions. But that's who we were at the time, and it's all good. Eventually, 10 years later, like you said, about 2005, 2006, we got back together, and I had some opportunities over in Europe, some people I knew. And when we sat there and talked at Ladybug's studio in Manhattan, we all met there, and we hashed out a lot of our problems enough to be able to say, you know what? Let's do this again. You know what I'm saying? So we didn't really complete, we didn't really like get all the issues out, but we got enough of them out that now we're speaking again and we're talking about doing business again. You know what I'm saying? And talking, asking each other about each other's families and stuff like the stuff that we wasn't doing prior to that. You know what I mean? And then I had these opportunities in Europe. I started making some calls, and next, you know, we had a nice little month long tour in Europe. We went out there. We were unsure what the reaction was going to be. We got out there, and every single show, lines were around the corner, and places were packed, and people were just like, I was like, wow. We were just like, damn. You know what I'm saying? In a world where you can get forgotten real quick, I can't believe that people still remember who we are and still want to hear what we, you know what I'm saying, what we do. But they did. And then after that, we decided, we got back to the States, we decided let's keep it going. And next thing you know, we started getting all these different offers started coming in, and we just rolled with it and started touring again. We had our bumps here and there a couple of times. We stopped touring for about maybe 6 months to a year or two because of different either personal ventures or misunderstandings. But then we always came back. And eventually around 2010 or so, we, or 2012, we did this big show in Seattle and for New Year's Eve. And the feelings and the vibes was just popping. And from there, we just been rolling ever since. You know what I'm saying? Up to this day.
That's awesome. Yeah, man. And people never forgot about you. The fans are still there. And yeah, like you're saying, sometimes it just takes some life experience. And, you know, we all mature the older we get, and wisdom and all that. Yep. And so sometimes you can, you know, it settles back down. The dust settles and you're like, let's try this. Let's take another crack at this thing. Let's do it.
Exactly. Especially if you have the opportunity to do it. You know what I'm saying? Because there could have been we could have went to Europe and been there and five people were in but it wasn't. So, I mean, damn, we were lucky and fortunate that somehow that music resonated with enough people to keep this thing going.
Well, I can guarantee you're going to have way more than five people at Franklin Park. It's going to be great.
I hope so. I hope so.
This Sunday, people will always remember Diggable Planets, and they can't wait to come, you know, dance and jam out with you all. It's called the Jazz and Blossoms Park Jam. It's going to be Sunday at DC's Franklin Park. Diggable Planets is going to be performing. I think it's part of the Words, Beats, and Life Festival is the overall week long.
Yeah.
This is like the culmination of it. So,
yeah, it's going to be cool. Saul Williams, it's going to be mad, incredible artists throughout the weekend. And on top of that, D.C.'s like my second home. You know what I'm saying? I went to school there, spent many, many years in D.C. I got mad friends. I got family. It's going to be like a homecoming for real.
Absolutely. And for Ladybug, Mecca, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Right
Ladybug
around the
too.
Corner. And...
Yep. Ishmael too. I mean, Ishmael knows he spent a lot of time in D.C. too, partying, you know what I'm saying, in our college days.
Where was your go-to spot? Was there a certain club? Is it not there anymore? Or is it just house parties?
Houston's was my spot. Kilimanjaro, Club Kilimanjaro. I don't know if Club Kilimanjaro was still there. It was like, it might still be there, but I don't think it is.
You all put them out of business. It was that wild.
Probably did. You know what I'm saying? The Ibex Club on Georgia Avenue. We used to go there all the time to see go-go bands and different hip-hop groups. The 930 Club back in the day was WUST Radio Music Hall, and we used to... go there for a lot of shows. When I was in college, me and my homies, we put together, sacrificed our college careers to put on parties. And we were like one of the first ones to bring Salt and Pepper down and performed at WUST Radio Music Hall.
Whoa, nice.
We brought down this rapper named Just Ice.
Nice.
And yeah, we brought a couple of people down for these Howard homecoming parties in the early 80s. It was crazy, but I can't wait to get back to DC, man. I love DC. The whole DMV is second home.
Absolutely. Well, we can't wait to say welcome home on Sunday. It's going to be great. Craig right. Doodlebug Irving, thanks for joining us. I really, really, this was so much fun. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, bro.
As soon as you hop out here, you need to, you know, slide into Christopher Nolan's DMs and say,
For real. I'm doing that. I am doing that. I am Googling Doodlebug movie, and I'm going to YouTube. I'm going to go to all those little platforms, see if I can find this.
Say, from one Doodlebug to another, let's collaborate. Exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. I'm just saying. All right, cool. Hey, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
All right, peace, brother.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.